And I decided to start teaching again after 6 months of not teaching. One of the things that motivated me was how Ram Dass, after his experience of paralysis, continued to teach. You know, he went from this idea of having had a stroke to saying, I was stroked. And I have not experienced that level of transformation, if you will. But what I have experienced is getting old. And it's coming in its own way rapidly. And it's very transformative. And something in me said, keep talking about it, share it. Because partly this group of us is moving in that direction. Everyone is moving in that direction. But at some point, it becomes the issue of your life. It can have to do with the infirmity, mental transformation, physical transformation. And a certain kind of challenge to your mental and biological state. And what do you do? How do you keep moving? So I'm not here to tell you that I have the answers, because I don't, but I'm here to report, in a way, week to week, sort of how this unfolds. And it may be a train wreck, in which case, you know, I apologize to all of you for having sat around to listen to these talks. But it is an interesting ride. And I do feel it's worth sharing as long as I'm still able to do that. But I really, really do see that, in a sense, Rudy said this was a life's work. And trust me, if there's ever been a time to present your spiritual effort, especially one that hopefully you've cultivated over the course of a lifetime, this will be that. This is the time that you need it. And I hope I don't become overly repetitive, but if I do, don't listen. Just follow your own journey. But it is, for me, an exquisitely fascinating moment where, in a sense, the center doesn't hold. The normative experience of being alive, the predictability of being alive, of knowing when you get up in the morning, it's going to be like when you woke up yesterday morning. Nope, no longer true. Going to bed at night, same thing. No idea what the journey will hold. It will be what it will be. In a sense, that's always been true, but through most of our lives, there's a kind of predictability to one day being somewhat similar to the one before, and a sense in a projection that it will continue to be thus. And the extraordinary thing about aging is that that's not true. The norm is no longer normative. It no longer is what it was yesterday. And one of the things that goes away, and that you have to deal with this sort of evaporation, is something that we don't even know we have, but it is built into the system pretty much. It's called certainty, a sense that life is certain. This is certain. What happens is certain. And we turn on all sorts of sort of instinctual needs that hold on to certainty, predictability. And in the end, that starts to go away. And so what do? And I can only talk about it through my own day-to-day experience, which is sometimes exceedingly joyous, directed, attended to, clarifying, and other days, no clue. just no clue. Everything in the story, everything in the narrative, everything I believed through almost 80 years of being alive is just suddenly not as absolute. And of course, we want the absolute. We want the assurance. And a lot of people build into their lives a kind of assurance based on the word faith. They believe this will be the case. That's a great thing. It's great until it goes out the window. If it goes out the window, if it doesn't go out the window, excuse me, terrific. But what I'm watching is that faith is part of the story, the narrative of our life that we've been telling ourselves or have been told from early on. And we engage it because it's like holding on to the rope going through the cave. We're going through the cave and there's a rope. And that rope gets us, we think, to the back out the cave. That's why it's there. Hold on to the rope. And parts of the caves are lit and parts of the caves have, you know, light in the distance. And, you know, if you're walking through a cave and holding on, you feel secure. But if at some point the light goes off in the cave and you can't find the rope to hold on to, what do you do? How do you move forward without the security of something that's always been there in a way, not there? I will tell you, you will have to figure that out. As the rope suddenly disappears and the lights go out, and I'm not talking dying, I'm talking, you know, getting up in the morning. What do I do? You know, things like, I talk about this a lot. You just finished your coffee, now what? The whole world's ahead of you, everything's possible, anything can be done, and there's nothing telling you what to do, nothing on the agenda, nothing giving you directive. It's just like, oh. And maybe something inside you will rise up, something will come into play and will say, well, write this email, check the news, go for a walk. That's good. Maybe the phone will ring and somebody will call you and say, how are you? And that's like, wow, the day is filling up. And things do arise. They do arise. Life, interestingly, while you're alive, comes at you. But there are also days where it does not come at you. And when you let go of the rope, or the rope is no, it's like dangling, or it's not carrying you anywhere, where you actually can't find it. Well, that's an interesting moment. And it has something to do with touch. And I just want to talk about touch for a second because it's so powerful. And I talked about it a little bit before. You know, Rudy used to work with us with his hands on our forehead or touching our heart or touching the top of our head. And it would be an explosive thing. And a lot of us know touch through touching a baby, touching each other. Parts of us are very sensitive to touch, an erotic touch. Some of us just feel comforted and loving in touch. So the physicality of touch is so potent that holding on to the rope is part of that touch. But now imagine letting go of the rope. And here you are having hugged that baby, and the baby's not there to hug. The person you have touched your whole life is not there to touch. What do you do? Well, here's a thing I have learned, and it's not particularly unique. My grandchildren are traveling in Portugal as we speak. I cannot hug them. I do not have the physical capacity to give them the hug that I would get in my car and drive over to their house to give them, because the tactile sense of that hug is so beautiful. But I do have this capacity, and we all do, to reach out and hug my grandchildren 6,000 miles away. Is it 6,000, 3,000? But I can touch them. And what happens when I touch them is my heart opens. I feel this enormity of love, the sense of connection, of proximity, of being one with them. And it's very potent. Gratefully, I have my wife in my bed when I wake up in the morning. And I, because Blanche can't hear an alarm clock, she needs to be awakened by a touch. And so I reach out every morning and I touch her. And it's the most beautiful and joyous way to wake up. And I do this, I mean, it's elaborate. It can go from any place, from hands to head to, you know, anywhere. It's just touch. And Blanche just sits and takes it in. I can feel it. She's very little response, but I know it's happening. And there's this gentle sense of being brought back into the world. And for me, it is so joyful and wonderful that I have my wife in my bed who I can touch. But I also have a dramatic mind that will experience and does experience, what do I do when she's not there, if that should ever happen? And what I get in my inner being is the touch that doesn't connect. It's the touch that doesn't have physical response, but it's still a touch. And it fills me with the same joy and love, but then it kind of accumulates this other thing of loss and sadness. Just projecting that Blanche would not be there for me to touch. I imagine myself in the morning stroking the pillow, stroking the bed sheet. I imagine myself not touching anything and feeling her presence. I imagine myself not being with my grandchildren and feeling their presence. I can imagine it with all of you. I can be unable to touch you in a physical sense, which is sad. But on the other hand, because I've trained in this idea of Shaktipat, of sending energy, which is basically touch. And this energy goes out and into you, and it feels like love. It feels like a consciousness and awareness. And the potency of it is the touch without touching. And yet it goes into you, and brilliantly, with nothing to do with me or my mind, it knows what to touch, where to go, what turns you on, if you will. It knows it, but it knows it in a way that you don't even know it. It just knows, go inside, find that spot, the G spot, if you will, in every human being, and go. And it's kind of erotic. It's kind of or orgasmic, let's put it that way. I was going to say cataclysmic, but it can be. It can do that, or it can just give you this, because you've been touched. You have been touched. What does it mean to be touched? It means that there is connectivity between you and someone, or in the abstraction with Shaktipat, you and some energy that touches you. That energy is really interesting because it's not owned. It's not my energy. I don't own Shaktipat. But when I open and I feel this thing come through, and it's so vibrant and alive, and it comes through and it goes to you because you're there to get it. And I feel it go through, and I feel it doing what it's doing, and I feel the touch occurring, and I feel you being touched, and I know something remarkable has taken place, because its whole reason for touching you is to affirm its true nature, which is something greater than both of us wants to touch us, utilizes us materially, physically, to touch another, to awaken us to the possibility of something beyond us caring about us, bringing us into a state of compassion and care. And it's really exquisitely beautiful. And that's why we do these classes. Of course, life can go on with people who've never done Shaktipat, who've never done classes like this, who just walk through life and just naturally feel this touch. it's a really fascinating part of human life when you feel for someone, feel for someone, or feel them without they're even knowing it. Somebody walks by on the street and you just go, oh, that transmits. It really transmits. You know, there's a thing about being beautiful, because that then you think it, that's what attracts that. And if you're very beautiful or very handsome, this thing goes out to you and you start to develop a kind of addiction to being beautiful and handsome or wanting this thing to come in. But what it really does is it just touches your surface. It just strokes you in a way. It feels good. And then you spend your life worrying about losing your beauty and losing your looks because nobody will care about you or touch you, which is in some ways true. Because if you haven't taken it in and deep, you're totally on the surface. And if you're totally on the surface, life becomes a real problem. And it becomes a problem because it erodes. Aging process is erosion. And the thing that made you who you were is starting to go away. Your looks, your mind, your memory, your history, all of the narrative of your life is going to go away. But what's it going away from? What is it evaporating from? Well, all that's left in the end is this physical thing, this shell, which does not look anywhere as good as it looked when you were 20, which doesn't remember half the things that happened when you were 20, which is sitting around getting more and more painful and rounded and discomforted and suddenly having, you know, what to do in the morning after coffee. And then the future starts to look less and less exciting because you don't have a story to build. All you have is kind of emptiness and nothing. And then the hope and the prayer that something will arise, that's the normal life. But what can happen, and this is the value of the meditative life, this is the value of an inner life, is if you can get quiet enough and open enough and even have a vague memory of this possibility, you open up and you will be touched. You will be touched. And what touches you is not a teacher with Shakti pot. It's not, memory sensation, really. It's something deeply inside is there. It's your hand on the rope. It's this guidance through the darkness. It's this holding on to something that knows where it's going or knows how to keep you going. It's affirming and confirming. And then you may actually get to the point where you lose touch of the rope. Not there. But that's when this invisible holding and touching happens. Because even without that grounding of certainty of the rope getting you to the end, even as you let go, that feeling of being held, guided and directed is still in play. And you can feel it even without the touch. You just are guided up to, well, where's the end of the cave if you're lucky? The light at the end of the tunnel. Something is touching you, caring about you, taking you forward. And that's what this idea of sort of old age starts to bring you to, feeling and trusting this unknown, you can't describe it really. It's just a kind of, it carries you forward. Now, that paints a very pretty picture. And I think all of us have a vague sense of what I'm talking about. But not to freak you out, but there comes a point sometimes where that touch, that guidance, that assurance, that holding without touching goes away. And you are just left in the abyss, if you will, just in the absolute darkness. And so the teaching for that at least as of this moment, and we will talk about it down the road as time goes on. But being in the abyss is horrifying. Having nothing to hold on to, forgetting where the light is, having no sense of forwardness, having no sense of where you are, having forgotten what this journey is at all, even, there you are in that space. And in that space of abyss and horror, there's only one important question. And I know I've said this a thousand times, but I'll keep saying it. Who is afraid? Who is afraid of not knowing? Who's afraid of the abyss? Who's afraid of the nothingness? And you are getting to a very pure point where the thing that is reacting to the nothingness is the problem. And it is the very thing over time that you are learning to let go of. The whole practice that we do of surrender, of allowing these deeper energies in, is to wash away the person holding on to the rope. So even when they take away the rope and then they take away your hand, there's this thing that feels separated from something. And the only thing you can do at that time is use your years of practice, if you have them, to go. It is so hard. It is so scary. And it is so much at the core of the human experience. And so, as I often do at the end of these classes, I bring up the teaching of Christ, who on the cross is having to ask these questions of, you know, what is this abyss, this terror that I'm experiencing, and having to let go and discovering that he feels abandoned and no one is there. No one is there. After all these years of doing and serving and being part of this larger voice, serving his father, as the narrative goes, he's abandoned. And every one of us, as we arrive at that place, no rope, no light, no hand, abyss, what does he do? And the story is, again, I've said this 400 different talks, and you can go back to every one of them. He turns his attention from the self, his individual self, into the larger world and says, forgive them, for they know not what they do. Caring about others, caring about something other than you, frees you from you. Remembering that there are others out there who are struggling in this world, even in your worst moments, is the answer. Empathy, compassion. This idea I talked about a few weeks ago, which I find so compellingly powerful, of asking the universe, God, whatever you want to call this force, how are you doing? How are you? Boy, oh boy. I don't know why that resonates so deeply, but it turning to it, not asking it to give you, but asking how it is, just seems like a wonderful way to go. So in this aging process that I am going through, and you will go through if you're not there already, so much of what I'm talking about right now will be in place and will happen. And if you can listen to this talk in 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, or whatever it is for you, you know, maybe it'll be helpful. Again, the technique is touch what can be touched physically, emotionally, materially, immaterially, love, connect to the world. And when all that starts to go away, allow yourself to be in the darkness of not knowing, of uncertainty, and ask, how are you doing? How are you? Try it. See where that goes. But, you know, I worry that this is going to get repetitive because I don't know what else to say. And I know week by week may not be big enough in terms of the transitions and the journey to be able to bring a lot more information. And as I have said 1,000 times, you know, when you got it, sign off. You don't need to show up for this. But the only good thing about the consistency of what we're doing here is the reinforcement of the touch, of the invisible touch. Shaktipat touches. Shaktipat goes into you and it warms you and it comforts you in a way that your mother would if you had a good mother, or your grandmother or something beyond that, which really loves and cares about you. And it's very hard to describe how much it loves and cares about you until you let it love you and care. But when it does, trust me, I feel it transmitted through this body, mind, physical, material being, and it goes into you. And it just goes into you and you and you and you and you and you and you. And it just absolutely cares. It just cares. Even when it abandons you, trust me, that's part of some very deep cosmic leap that we all have to make from ourself to the other, to other. Get rid of you and let the totality step in. So that's the journey. That's the talk. I come here every week and I go, oh my God, what am I going to say this time? I know it has a certain repetitive aspect, but trust me, it takes a while for it to root itself completely and for you to let go of the handrails and just walk your walk. So as long as you want help and guidance, I can try to be here. And my own help and guidance, thank God, comes through for no particular reason. And I'm so grateful that after I finish my coffee, something rises up. Okay. Any incredible questions or unincredible questions about any of this? If there are no questions, we're on the same schedule. My brother-in-law and sister are coming to visit next Sunday, and I may or may not teach, and I'll send out a note if that's going to be the case. But you know, we'll keep doing this, and you're always welcome to come. And I love you all.